Yeah.
Hello.
This is John Spencer from the Blues Explosion. You got to tune into Zoom Funk.
Henry Rollins, the man, the myth, the machine. Henry Rollins, like you've never seen him before. Prophet, poet, psychopath, or just plain pathetic. You decide.
Bono from U2.
I actually look back on the 80s and I think these were great moments. We were daring and we had no sense of cool whatsoever. We were Irish, we're from Dublin. We didn't know how to look, how to dress. We were so far removed from the culture of rock and roll.
Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth.
I'm going to be 40 years old on July 25th, so I don't think I'm going to have a rave so much. I might have a grave.
The history of rock and roll as told in our radio show. Teil 7. Die Post-Punk-Jahre. Sendung von Michael Bartle.
Say I've been to school for a year or two and you know you've seen it all. The data is coming and you'll go far back east in time to crawl. The ethnic jazz to the ritual snares on the vibe grand stereo. But I can let you know how the niggas feel cold and the sun's got so much soul. It's time.
Die Dead Kennedys interviewen sich selbst.
Punk ist eine Haltung der Hoffnung. Punk bedeutet, dass wir unser Leben nicht nach dem Diktat der Großkonzerne führen. Jeder kann Punk sein, ohne Rücksicht auf Alter, Rasse, Kleidung oder Haarschnitt. Punk ist im Kopf und nicht in den Nieten auf der Lederjacke.
Kinds of dress and hairstyles are punks if they want to be that.
Do we really think that punk rock has any political impact?
It serves as a way to educate people.
Glaubt ihr wirklich, Punk hätte politischen Einfluss? Es ist eine Möglichkeit, Leute zu erziehen, die zu faul zum Lesen sind. Punk-Shows dienen als Treffpunkt zum Miteinanderreden, Ideen entwickeln, um dann rauszugehen und was zu bringen. Manche Leute bringen es, manche nicht. Wenn es keine politische Wirkung gäbe, wäre auch nicht so oft die Polizei da, um Auftritte zu sprengen, im Gegensatz zu Heavy-Metal-Shows. Welche Art von Gewalt wir verabscheuen? Wenn Leute andere ohne Grund verletzen. Wenn jemand eine Prügelei anfängt, um seine Männlichkeit zu beweisen, wie bei den Rockern oder bei den Soldaten. Oder das, was die Roten Brigaden in letzter Zeit gebracht haben. Dass sie einfach drauf losballern, Leute zu lebenslangen Krüppeln machen. Nur um zu zeigen, wie kaltblütig sie mit einem Gewehr umgehen können. Genauso die IRA. Damit erreicht man nichts.
Injure them for life in order to show how cool they are with a rifle. Same with the Irish Republican Army. It's not getting anything done. In Germany, the police were looking for excuses to go tell the newspapers that there were riots.
In Deutschland hat die Polizei nach Gründen gesucht, um den Zeitungen von Krawallen bei Dead Kennedys Konzerten berichten zu können. Da hilft's natürlich nichts, wenn Leute in Recklinghausen die Toiletten kurz und klein schlagen. Das dient dann als Grund, alle weiteren Punk-Konzerte in der Gegend zu verbieten. Leidtragende sind dann Leute wie die Upright Citizens, eine Band aus der Gegend, die keine Auftrittsmöglichkeiten mehr hat. Welche Art von Gewalt wir befürworten? Wenn Leute sich bei Zusammenkünften des Ku Klux Klan gegen die Klanführer auflehnen. Wenn die Leute angegriffen werden, die die Vorherrschaft des weißen Mannes durchzudrücken versuchen. Oder man umzingelt sie, zeigt mit Fingern auf sie und lacht sie einfach aus. Sicher ein guter Effekt. Ich glaube, Gewalt ist nur sinnvoll, wenn sie ein Ziel hat, etwas bewirkt und gut durchdacht ist. Wenn jemand wirklich eine Kloschüssel kaputt schlagen will, warum bei einem Punkkonzert? Eine andere Art von positiver Gewalt ist, wenn alle Leute in einem Raum Pogo tanzen und rumtoben. Das sieht für manche Außenstehende gewalttätig aus, ist es aber nicht. Weil jeder seinen Spaß hat, solange niemand dazukommt, der anfängt, ernst zu machen.
Right now, let's talk about jobs.
Die Dead Kennedys mit Life Sentence 1984 live in der Münchner Alabama-Halle.
Go to school, they tell you. Learn all our bullshit. And you too can have a nice job. You may not like your job, but that doesn't matter. In school you learn to work like a rat for somebody else. Do your job. Get melded into shit unless you look in the mirror and ask yourself why. This is called Life Sentence. Gotta try, cause ain't we got the crap. Got a serious, got a plan, right past those inches. Oh my God, it's senior year. All you care about is your career. It's a lie, it's a lie, it's a lie.
Hi, this is Nana Cherry, and you are listening to Synth Funk. Don't give up. Gareth Sager and Bruce Smith, they were in the pop group together. And then they had met Sean Oliver. Mark Springer was also like a kind of fairly intense jazz, but also like a very classically trained piano player. I mean, they were listening to like, okay, Captain Beefheart, and of course part of the punk thing, but probably more into like blues and jazz and yeah, Frank Zappa and stuff like that. But with a kind of coming out of a punk mentality, it was just like, okay, well, great, we're listening to all this stuff, so let's just take all that and make our own thing, you know? And so they were doing Rip, Rig and Panic, and I kind of knew them a little bit. I was really, really good friends with Ari up from the Slits. She had sung on a Rip, Rig and Panic track, and I think they kind of thought of me because I was Don's daughter. The first album was called God, was already recorded by the time I sang. I think the first track I sang on was Go, 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 This Is It. And, you know, literally Gareth had to, like, hold my hand. But as soon as I heard the music, I was kind of fine. I mean, I didn't really know anything. I didn't know if I could do it. I didn't know what it was going to sound like. You know what I mean? It was just a blank page, a blank project. But it was like, yeah, I think that always to me it's like the feeling and the sound of something. I mean, it's the instinct, isn't it? That's kind of coming almost from a guttural place rather than a place of too much analyzing and trying too hard. And then what was like left of the punk thing I did kind of in New York, going to quite a lot to a club where the Bad Brains used to play, but there was also like reggae music around. It was just starting to, you know, kind of change clothes a little bit, but, you know, listening to The Clash a lot and Richard Hell and Television and Susie and the Banshees and, you know, Sex Pistols and all that stuff. Anyway, but I met again, which is kind of weird because so many threads go back to the family, so I actually met Ari, because my dad was on a tour. The Slits invited him to tour with them when they were touring Cut, the album, because they were so into Don Cherry and Brown Rice. And, you know, they were girls, they were young women. And, you know, I loved polystyrene. And I think, you know, always for me, if there's any woman doing anything, you know, anything like that, you sort of, it's extra exciting. So the rest is, you know, as we history.
Don't Steve Albini, Produzent von den Pixies und Nirvana.
A friend of mine introduced me to the Ramones, and he had the first Ramones album on a cassette, and he played it for me on the school bus. At the time, I couldn't really tell if I liked it or not, but I knew that there was something special and different about it. I became kind of obsessed with that first Ramones album. It sounds kind of like a cliche, but I think everything I've done in music and most of the things I've done in my life are probably one way or another a result of me listening to the Ramones as a teenager. Because I started to take music seriously by becoming obsessed with the Ramones. I started to listen carefully to music because I had this one Ramones album that was like my entire musical library, you know? And I would listen to this album over and over and over and over again. I started to see through the record to the people behind it, and I started to identify things in my life and their lives that were the same or that were, like, legitimate. And I think what it was is my exposure to music up until that point had been minimal. When you have an album by Alice Cooper, it's, like, completely fantastic. It's not real people. It's some kind of abstraction of humanity. Like, you can't imagine a real person making that record. The Ramones, to me, seemed like real people. It seemed like they liked all the things I did, you know? They made this had the same kind of sense of humor. And they seemed like they were the same kind of goofy people that all my friends at school were. Like, you know, kind of marginalized people, like nerds and you know. I identified pretty strongly with the Ramones.
Hey, kids, it's me, Joey Ramone, here on Zintfunk. Das ist gut, ja?
Hey!
Steve Albini, Produzent von den Pixies und Nirvana.
The records that I sort of stumbled across that became other really important records to me, almost immediately after buying that first Ramones album, I bought the first two albums by Wire. And those two records were like an opposite page from the Ramones. Everyone that I spoke to said, oh yeah, those are both punk bands, you know, but they were quite different. And that gave me an inkling that there was a broad vocabulary available, you know. But I could still tell that there was something about these people that was different from rock stars. And I very quickly kind of developed a distaste for rock stars. Like, I don't think I've ever really admired rock stars.
Become a concrete dream. Another cigarette, another day, from A to B, again avoiding cDNA disease, where you play the blues.
I lived in Montana, and Montana was isolated from all the big population centers, But every once in a while, someone would come in from, say, Seattle or Portland and bring news of what was happening in Seattle and Portland. Right? And I kept hearing about this band from Portland called The Wipers. And everyone that I met from Portland would say, oh, you would love The Wipers. So I made it a point of trying to find a Wipers record eventually, and I did. They had one album at the time called Is This Real? And I played that record to death. That was another record that seemed like the Ramones, in that I could tell the people behind the record were interesting people and that I would get along with them. And there was a period where he did all of his correspondence and communication by going to an ice cream shop and using the payphone in the ice cream shop. So if you wanted to speak to Greg Sage, you had to call this ice cream shop between the hours of 12 and 2, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, something like that.
That was when?
This would have been like 1980, 81, something where that was how you could contact Greg Sage if you wanted to. He did all of his business from the payphone, and that was how you contact Greg Sage. I remember getting this story and getting the number of that malt shop and calling there, and I spoke to Greg Sage very briefly. I don't actually remember what I spoke to him about, but I remember feeling like quite satisfied that this connecting of the dots actually got me to this person who had made a record that was really important to me. You know, I thought that was pretty amazing.
Grant Hart über Husker Du und Machos im Punk.
I'm really only beginning to find out now.
Mir wird erst jetzt langsam klar, wie viele Leute aus anderen Bands zu dieser Zeit ein Doppelleben führten. Also einerseits ein ganz normales, schwules Leben hatten und gleichzeitig Macho-Punk-Rocker waren.
Normal gay life, although being, you know, Macho-Punk-Rockers.
Um ehrlich zu sein, hat auch bei Husker Du keiner jemals eine Regenbogenflagge geschwenkt. Wir hätten es nicht geleugnet, aber es hatte uns auch keiner danach gefragt.
Inclined to body build or things like that. Not to single out Henry Rollins, but I mark his appearance on the American punk scene really as being the dividing line from the time that you could go to a punk rock show and feel 100% safe to a time where you might get beaten up by somebody who doesn't get the picture.
There are things that I'd like to say, but I'm never talking to you again. There's things I'd like to pray somewhere, but I'm never talking to you again. I'm never talking to you again. I'm never talking to you. I'm tired of wasting all my time trying to talk to you. I put you down where you belong, but I'm never talking to you again. I show you everywhere you're wrong, but I'm never talking to you again. I'm never talking to you again. I'm never talking to you. I'm tired of wasting all my time trying to talk to you. Talking to you.
Henry Rollins von Black Flag und der Henry Rollins Band.
We've had this band 10 years now. I've watched a lot of these people who, you know, who used to be running next to me go off the road and you never see them again, or they reappear in some horrible kind of music they're doing, or some hacked version of themselves. Sometimes there's drugs involved.
Es gibt unsere Band jetzt seit 10 Jahren. Ich beobachte oft, wie andere Bands verschwinden oder als müder Abklatsch von sich selbst wieder auftauchen. Manchmal spielen Drogen eine Rolle, manchmal sind die Leute ausgebrannt. Ich denke, dass viele, die sich entscheiden, Musiker zu werden, die Energie unterschätzen, die nötig ist, um dieses Zielstreben für den Rest des Lebens aufrechtzuerhalten. Zwar meinen die Leute es sicher ernst, aber es heißt auch, Opfer zu bringen. Entscheidest du dich für Familie, heißt das auch für dich, die nächsten 18 Jahre nicht unbedingt die Freiheit zu haben, nach Lust und Laune herumzureisen. Das ist diese Verantwortung. Oder du bist drogenabhängig. Ein spezieller Lebensstil, für den man sich entscheiden kann. Eine ganz eigene Welt eigentlich.
That's a whole lifestyle you must commit to. You know, that's a whole world in itself. Those guys are on their own thing. They have their own priorities, schedule, their sense of right and wrong. It's different than someone else's. I think when some people don't make the full commitment to the music, I think the lifestyle beats the hell out of them. What got a lot of people who were running with me off the side of the road was poverty.
Und wenn du dich für eine Musikerlaufbahn entscheidest, dann wird dir dieser Lebensstil irgendwann das Kreuz brechen, wenn du nicht hundertprozentig dahinter stehst. Ich kenne Leute, die sind beispielsweise einfach nicht damit fertig geworden, dass sie kein Geld haben. Wirklich kein Geld. Ich kenne das. Ich hatte 15 Jahre lang kein Geld. Die ersten 10 Jahre war ich sogar richtig arm. Und es macht dich irgendwann mürbe. Du wirst verrückt dabei, gut zu sein, aber nicht zu wissen, womit du deine Miete zahlen sollst. Während du andere Fake-Bands in ihren Limousinen vorbeifahren siehst, die jeden Abend ihre Gitarren kaputt machen, die du gut gebrauchen könntest. Und die mehr Geld für Drogen ausgeben, als du in einem ganzen Jahr siehst. Das macht dich verrückt. Irgendwann sagst du, scheiß drauf. Ich suche mir einen Job bei einer Plattenfirma oder bei McDonald's.
I'll go work at McDonald's. You know, you can get very disenchanted with the whole thing. It's a tough way to live.
Nick Cave im Zündfunkstudio 1992.
Henry is just a child. It's the dream of a child, basically.
Also Henry.
I mean, it comes from the title "Papa Won't Leave You, Henry," which is a song sung by a father to his child. The song is in fact a lullaby in a sense, but at the same time it documents the horrors of the world, the personal and the horrors that exist outside in the world.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering that your style didn't change very much. You weren't inflicted by Brazilian culture or anything like David Byrne. He does.
Well, I mean, we're not like David Byrne. I mean, we have our own ideas. We know what sort of music we want to make. I certainly didn't go to Brazil to plunder. Do you know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
To plunder the cultural styles of Brazil. This is all part of the world music kind of thing, which is something that I'm certainly not involved in. I make very idiosyncratic personal music, and I just happen to be living in Brazil. I'm Australian. I've lived in many different countries, and at the moment I happen to be living in Brazil. It's not a musical choice. I mean, it's the success of the Bad Seeds, in a sense, is why we've survived for so long, is that we don't We don't constantly live with one another and go out with each other and live in each other's pockets, and we're not married to each other like some groups are. We work together, and we're a professional working group, and when we're not working together, everyone else is off in their own countries, you know, doing their own projects. Mm-hmm.
Flixer Bargeld's still with the Bad Seeds. He's still with Einstürzende the Neubauten too.
Yeah.
What's a major thing for you that you use him as a guitarist? Was ist für dich das Wichtigste bei Flixer Bargeld, ihn als Gitarrist zu hören? Because he ain't no big guitarist like.
So. Well, he's not. I mean, he plays an extremely individual style of guitar. I mean, I don't know any other guitarist who plays guitar in the way that he does. And his personality is all over Bad Seeds records. I mean, his musical personality is very important to the way that we sound. In fact, he can take quite an ordinary song and simply by playing guitar over it change it into something quite unique. And I mean, he's an extremely important aspect of the band. I mean, we don't choose the members of our group through talent, in terms of how well they can play their instruments, how talented they can play their instruments. We would never even consider having auditions as such if we wanted a new member. We choose the members of our group simply through their personalities and whether we're friends and whether we like each other and whether we can work together. And that's basically why he's there.
And the mercy seat is awaiting, and I think my head is burning, and in a way I'm yearning to be done with all this measuring of proof. But an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway I've told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die.
Turban sounds of catalog, a black tube, the skull of frog, the walls of bad black bottom kind, they are the sick breath at my hind, they are the sick breath at my hind, they are the sick breath at my hind, they are the sick breath gathering at my hind.
I hear stories from the chamber, Christ was born into a manger, like some ragged stranger died upon the cross, and might I say, it seems so fitting in its way, he was a carpenter by trade, or at least that's what I'm told.
Like my good hand tattooed evil across his brother's fist, that filthy five, they did nothing to challenge or resist.
In heaven his throne is made of gold, the ark of his testament is stone, the throne from which I'm told all history does unfold. Down here it's made of a wood and wire, and my body is on fire, and God is never far away. Into the mercy seat I climb, my head is shaved, my head is wide, like the moth that tries to enter the bright eye. So I go shuffling out of life, just to hide in death a while. Anyway, I never mind.
Killing is called evil.
Black Francis von den Pixies.
Whether it's your first album or it's your 10th album, I would hope that as the Pixies, we will always keep our attitude the same. The mentality is that we're competing with our favorite records. And so it has nothing to do with critics and audience, although they're important. That all has to do with giving yourself excitement about listening to records like you do when you're very young, you know. So while you're making a record, it's always the same. You know, you're either going to make something good or you're going to make something not good. You know, that's it. Frustrated, but I'm a fairly positive person, and I just want to make music. That's it. I want to be seen in the arena of creativity, and that is all. That is it. I don't. The types of movies, the types of books, and the types of music I like is not so connected to anything except itself. I like Samuel Beckett. I like David Lynch. I like Iggy Pop, Sonic Youth, The Shangri-Las, Mr. Postman. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I like to be excited about music, you know? I don't want to think about anything. I just want to make music.
Die Smashing Pumpkins unplugged in einem Hotelzimmer exklusiv für den Zündfunk.
This is a new song that kind of not done, but it's called Drown.
Very fast.
Billy Corgan von den Smashing Pumpkins.
The hardest thing with the band is to achieve subtlety and grace with four people. You can do it in your head, but four people getting off, I mean, when you're talking about the minutest of things, you know, little mountains here and there, it's hard to explain.
And everybody has its own interpretation of how it should sound.
No, they have my interpretation.
Sorry.
Probably a song that consistently stays with me is Snail. It wasn't one of those songs like when you first played it, you thought, oh, this is a great song. I really had to work on it and work on it and kept it in my mind and kept thinking about it. I don't know. I just really like the way it turned out on the record.
Yes, you'll think.
Thurston Moore von Sonic Youth.
We've never listened to more electronic stuff. We've always listened to electronic music ever since the 1970s. I mean, that's sort of what we came out of. We came out of this downtown New York music scene of experimental music, and that's how Sonic Youth started. We started as a band coming out of a scene that was involved with experimental music and avant-garde music.
Wir haben nie mehr elektronische Musik gehört, weil wir schon seit den 70ern elektronische Musik hören. Wir kamen ja aus dieser experimentellen Downtown New York Musikszene. So fing Sonic Youth an. Wir begannen in einer Szene, die in experimentelle und in Avantgarde-Musik involviert war. Aber wir wollten keine Band sein, die nur an Orten der Kunst spielt. Wir wollten auch in Rock'n'Roll-Locations auftreten, weil wir auch eine Rock'n'Roll-Band sein wollten, die experimentelle Gesten benutzt. So begann alles. In den 80ern waren wir dann in den US Underground Rock eingebunden, mit Bands wie Black Flag oder Minutemen. Und wir waren auf SST Records, dem Label von Black Flag. Wir waren Teil dieser Underground-Szene, Husker Du, Butthole Surfers, Big Black.
In a way, it was very strange in the 1980s, because a lot of people were really into this attitude of it has to be very pure, it has to be rock, pure rock and roll, and like, and not to use any too much kind of what they called artsy influences, as if it was a term.
Im Grunde verbrachten wir die ganzen 80er in dieser Szene. Eines Teils war es auch strange in den 80ern, denn viele Leute hatten diese Haltung, es muss pure Rockmusik sein und nichts anderes, bloß nicht artsy Einflüsse benutzen. Artsy war damals ein Schimpfwort. Die Leute hätten auf uns gezeigt, schaut hin, das ist eine Artband. Das wäre schlimm gewesen. Aber lustigerweise war es dann nach dem Mainstream-Erfolg von Punkrock so, dass viele junge Leute gesagt haben, wir bewegen uns jetzt doch in Richtung artsy Avantgarde, denn diese Musik lässt sich so einfach nicht verkommerzialisieren. Für uns war das unglaublich, denn das war plötzlich die Welt, aus der wir gekommen sind. Auf einmal konnte man all das sehen und hören, Leute, die Ambient machen, mit Elektronik arbeiten oder Plattenspieler einbauten. Es war so, als ob sich um uns herum alles im Kreis gedreht hat. Das fiel genau mit unserer Studioaufbauphase zusammen, als wir all die Improvisationsmusik gemacht haben. Wir wollten die Musik auch veröffentlichen, und nachdem wir schon 17 Jahre als Einheit zusammengespielt haben, wollten wir auch Musik rausbringen, die so klang, als ob wir junge Emporkömmlinge wären. Und so begannen wir, diese Platten auf unserem Sonic Youth Records Label zusammenzustellen. Wir haben beschlossen, die Stücke jetzt selbst zu veröffentlichen, weil, ich meine, Steve, unser Drummer, hat schon sein eigenes Smells Like Label, und er war ehrgeizig genug, dieses Indie-Label aufzubauen.
And he was ambitious enough to make this established independent label. I also release records on Ecstatic Peace, but that's more of a vanity label for me.
Das ganze Nirvana-Konzept war natürlich sehr interessant. Das fiel mir schon damals auf, als ich sie zum ersten Mal in einem kleinen Club sah, weil sie noch fast kein Publikum hatten. ihre Art des Gitarrespielens, ihre Art des Songwritings, ihre Art von Rockmusik, das war schon alles sehr eigen. Niemand hat mit seiner Musik seine Generation mehr repräsentiert als er. All die Kids, die in den 80ern Bands wie Flipper oder Birthday Party oder Black Flag oder Butthole Surfers oder die Neubauten gehört haben. Auch die Pixies und auch R.E.M. und diese Art von Musik. Kurt war wirklich jemand, der all das genommen hat und, wenn man so will, ultimativ weiterverarbeitet hat zu melodischem Hardrock. Es war wirklich erstaunlich. Ja, ich glaube, nachdem er gestorben war, haben viele gesagt, es ist so, als ob alles ausgelöscht wäre. Und alles, was man danach gehört hat und von Nirvana beeinflusst war, klang so zweite Liga-mäßig. Bush oder Pennywise oder Green Day. Sie hatten alle den Zauber nicht, den Nirvana hatten. Deswegen wurde das alles ziemlich stressig und nervig als Musikform. Und deswegen machten junge kreative Musiker dann erstmal experimentellere Musik. Ja, danach war es irgendwie vorbei. Nirvana waren wirklich ein Meilenstein für das Geschlecht der Rockmusik.
Rape me, rape me again.
Laurie Anderson, 1996, über die digitale Revolution.
There's so much incredible enthusiasm about the digital revolution. That's all that's happening. You know, cyberspace, websites, you know, e-cash, digital sex, everything. The entire world is a multimedia show at this point. So for me as a multimedia artist, you know, I would look at this and go, give me a pencil. I don't want to do this stuff anymore. Mom and Dad. Mostly, you know, it's advertising sites. Typical website is, you know, an advertisement for yourself. You know, here's my pictures of my dog, and here's our family vacation. Who's going to look at this? You don't even look at your own family vacation. You expect other people to look at your family vacation? I don't think so. You know, it's just not that interesting, not even to you. So, you know, we have this, the impulse to turn yourself into a second-dimensional creature. And it's quite interesting when you try to build another world, almost like, I mean, I think in a way, building cyberspace is a bit like trying to construct a kind of heaven of information, an alternate world where things have been fixed up. But at the moment, it's a very sterile heaven. You know, not much is happening, not much chaos, not much conflict. It's all very pretty and all very clean and all very dull.
Are you coming home?
I thought, wow, maybe there is a possibility to make work like this in which there's room to change things. And since then, you know, I've been looking at every time I see a video or a film or hear a piece of music, I think, boy, that sounds so canned. You know, you mean you can't change anything? The reason there's so much information is there's so many people. And we're all thinking, and we're all doing things, and we're all generating huge amounts of information. This is a very, very different world than it was 3 years ago. Certainly a completely different one than 10 years ago. It's just, we're drowning in information and in product. So I think people are really feeling that pressure of, you know, just too much, stop, stop, please, no more stuff, you know.
And I
said, okay, who is this really?
The History of Rock and Roll, as told in our radio show. Teil 7, die Post-Punk-Jahre. Sendung von Michael Bartle.
Interviews Roderich Fabian, Bernie Jugel, Sabine Gietzelt und Michael Bartle.